It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're with us on the Ideas Network. Coming up, we'll learn about how to use fresh vegetables to round out one-dish meals on this week's Food Friday.
First, President Trump has embarked on his first international diplomatic trip as commander-in-chief. He'll be visiting Saudi Arabia first, followed by Israel, Belgium, and Italy, and he'll also meet the Pope at the Vatican.
These first foreign trips take on a fair amount of significance for a new president. In President Trump's case, it may be overshadowed by recent scandals sparked by the firing of FBI Director James Comey.
Lily Gorin joins us now. She is a professor of political science and global studies at Carroll University in Waukesha. She's the author of Women and the White House and Mad Men in Politics. Lily, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me on today. It's great to be here.
Well, Lily, President Trump has been billed so far on this trip as a reluctant traveler. Why is he seen as less than enthusiastic about traveling, especially in this trip?
Well, I mean, if you followed the campaign, it was very interesting. Mr. Trump doesn't like to sleep any place other than his home. And there were only about three nights in the entire presidential and primary campaign when he didn't go back to New York for the evening. And so, you know, he's sort of not crazy about the idea of apparently sleeping someplace other than his house. And he's also, you know, a little concerned about the length of this trip. He'd asked for it to be shortened, but it's involving the first two country stops in Saudi Arabia and Israel, and then these larger meetings that involve NATO and the G7. And to some degree, none of the participants in these meetings have a lot of control over, you know, how long they are. So he couldn't sort of move them. But this is the trip he's going on. And so we'll see what happens.
And these trips, they can be seen as potential landmines by presidential handlers. What kinds of things can go wrong on a big international trip?
Well, you know, there are any things from like things that happen to all of us, like you might get food poisoning or something. It's obviously we know happened to George H.W. Bush when he was in Japan on a trip. To, you know, sort of small flubs like that. But there's also the issue, and this is, I think, where some of the folks who are working in the White House are most concerned, of the president going, quote, off script. And, you know, you're dealing with a lot of heads of state. You have, you know, sort of cultural awareness to sort of integrate into being in different countries and, you know, sort of operating within their cultural norms. And then there's always, you know, Mr. Trump likes to tweet. He likes to say things that may be not what his staff were hoping he would say. And so there's some of those dynamics at play here.
And so to try to circumvent all of those things which could happen, typically it sounds like a lot of preparation is put into this kind of trip. What do we know about what President Trump himself has undergone to get ready for this big 9-day trip?
Well, from, you know, what I've read about reports about the preparations for the trip, there have been briefings and discussions and, you know, sort of prep with regard to diplomatic issues and particular topics that are going to come up in places like Saudi Arabia or Israel. But Mr. Trump has also been paying a lot of attention to some of the domestic issues that he's sort of been enveloped by in the last 2 weeks with regard to the firing of the FBI director and the appointment of Robert Mueller as the sort of investigator. And Trump has been paying a lot of attention to this. And so what I understand is that it's been more difficult to make sure that he's sort of completely involved in the briefings and, you know, getting all the information he needs before he goes on a big diplomatic trip.
We're talking with Lily Gorin right now from Carroll College, talking about President Trump's first big international trip as commander-in-chief. And Lily, you mentioned that there has been some drama back here at home. There's controversy that is very far from being resolved. Do you expect this to overshadow the trip?
I don't know if it will overshadow the trip per se. And that, you know, is also a function of what's going to be in the news domestically. I understand that Mr. Comey may be testifying before Congress next week. And so if he does, and there are headlines that are generated by that, it's obviously going to be, you know, something that we in the United States will be paying attention to. And it's sometimes more difficult for the, you know, sort of the emphasis of the international trip than to compete with domestic narratives. Other presidents have obviously gone abroad when they were embroiled in a variety of scandals. Both Richard Nixon and Bill Clinton were abroad in the middle and sort of very high points in the various scandals that they were involved in. And this is not necessarily, quote, a high point. This is a sort of churning scandal, as you will.
Well, I suppose it could also be a boon to the Trump White House. There could be interesting, positive headlines that have nothing to do with what's happening, you know, here in the United States.
Absolutely. And that's, I think, a lot of what the anticipation and hope is, that Mr. Trump will go to these countries. He's going to give a big speech about Islam in Saudi Arabia. He's going to go to Israel and go to Yad Vashem, the Holocaust Memorial. The anticipation is that, you know, having a president on an international trip will present other headlines that have to do with the United States and diplomacy and engagement with our allies, and that the hope is that those headlines and that news will overshadow some of the sort of scandal that we're sort of experiencing right now at home.
And the president, as you said, he's starting off in Saudi Arabia. You said he's expected to give a big speech about Islam. Do you know what he's expected to say, what the overarching message is expected to be?
I don't know. And it's being written by Stephen Miller, who's not necessarily been a big supporter of Islam. And so that there is some concern with regard to, you know, what the trajectory of that speech is going to be. But it's also supposed to be a kind of response, if you will, to President Obama's speech in Cairo when he went there early in his presidency to talk about the United States relationship with the Arab world. And so this may be, again, President Trump talking about, sort of the United States in relation to our allies. Saudi Arabia is one of our biggest allies in the Middle East. They're also incredibly wealthy, and a lot of their money comes from petroleum. And so that may be part of the discussion with regard to energy and natural resources as well.
Now, Saudi Arabia had not been a huge fan of President Obama's foreign policy in several regards. Do we know about whether Saudi Arabia is looking to sort of hit the reset button with President Trump and start anew?
That seems to be what I understand they are hoping to do, and that, you know, that the royal family in Saudi Arabia would like to do business with the United States, as it were. We, as the United States, sell a lot of military equipment of various kinds to Saudi Arabia. We have for a very long time. They are a military ally of ours there, and their position as a, you know, substantial petroleum exporter, not just to the United States, but to a lot of our allies, is also an important component with regard to our relationship to Saudi Arabia. They've also invited a lot of leaders from other Middle Eastern countries to come there while President Trump is there, and to, you know, to sort of listen to and be part of the speech that he's going to give in Saudi Arabia.
Now, as you said, he's going to be visiting Israel just about a week after it was revealed that he has shared sensitive, classified, likely intelligence from Israeli intelligence agents. And I'm wondering how you think that could affect the conversations that he has with U.S. allies on this trip.
Well, I think that the Israelis hope to have a good visit with President Trump. Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister in Israel, is more enthusiastic about President Trump than he was about President Obama. And I think that the Israeli government, and to some degree the Trump entourage, are hoping to sort of not pay a lot of attention to the, you know, sort of the issue around the revealed classified data, and to some degree continue to have a really robust relationship with Israel, particularly with regard to sharing intelligence.
Does he have any mending offenses to do there, do you think?
Well, it, you know, it may be sort of a personal one-on-one with Netanyahu, that the two of them will sort of sit down and chat about some of this stuff. You know, there is this discussion that Trump had talked about on the campaign trail, and that has come up a little bit with regard to moving the United States embassy to Jerusalem, which is somewhat controversial. And this may be an opportunity for the Israelis to press the Trump administration to move forward on that, because he's sort of backed off of that recently. And so it's, you know, it may be the two heads of state, as it were, sort of having a conversation, more or less the two of them, to see what kind of deals they make.
Lily Gorin is with us right now. She's a professor of political science and global affairs at Carroll University in Waukesha. And she's with us today to talk about President Trump's first foreign trip.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What do you hope the president accomplishes on this trip? How do you expect the meetings to go with these leaders in other countries? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation in just a bit. Stay with us here on Central Time.
You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Kate Archer Kent.
And I'm Veronica Rickert, and we're continuing our conversation with political science professor Lily Gorin, talking about President Trump's first international trip since taking office. Lily is with Carroll University in Waukesha.
And you can join the conversation. What do you think will come from the president's trip abroad? What do you hope he accomplishes on this first international journey? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page.
Now, Lily, while he's in Brussels, President Trump is expected to attend a NATO summit with other leaders. And as you know, the president has been pretty critical, had some tough words for NATO, particularly on the campaign trail. So how do you think that dynamic could end up playing out on this trip?
Well, I mean, this may be an opportunity for some of the other NATO leaders to talk to President Trump about, you know, what he really intends with regard to the United States involvement in NATO. And does he have a fully fleshed out opinion of what needs to change, what NATO can do better, or what NATO shouldn't be doing, you know, what might be some of the issues that the leaders themselves can come together about. You know, NATO was created during the Cold War as, you know, as sort of an alliance across the Atlantic to battle the Soviets. And there's been a lot of discussion about, you know, NATO is still at a useful alliance, but its mission has changed because the Soviet Union doesn't exist anymore. And so it may be an opportunity for President Trump and a lot of the other NATO leaders to sort of talk about recalibrations with regard to what NATO's mission is. And I guess, you know, they can press him on whether or not the United States will remain in NATO.
You know, conversations like that, they may be difficult. In a trip like this, we were talking earlier about how choreographed they tend to be for good reason. And the president is known for shooting from the hip. So do you imagine there to be some a disconnect there in his communication style versus some of these highly charged situations that he may find himself in?
I mean, it remains to be seen. And this is definitely his first foreign trip as president. You know, he did go to Scotland when he was a candidate to open one of his golf courses there. And most other sort of new presidents have usually gone to either Mexico or Canada as their first trip to kind of, you know, get their feet wet and, you know, to go through a lot of the sort of diplomatic processes. But Trump decided to, you know, sort of wrap this big trip with the G7 and with NATO and with these stops in the sort of these religious centers for Judaism and Islam and for Catholicism all together. And so, you know, he's looking to probably make a, quote, big splash, as is the inclination of President Trump, from what I've seen of him, not only as a political person, but also, you know, otherwise. And so it may be that, you know, the other leaders also are going to have to sort of get used to dealing with President Trump, who's different from certainly George W. Bush or Bill Clinton or Barack Obama.
Now, you mentioned that he's visiting holy sites, several of them on this trip. He's also going to be meeting in person with the Pope. Can you tell us about some of those sites that he's expected to visit and what the takeaway might be for him?
Well, he's going to, you know, he's going to be going to the Vatican and having a meeting with the Pope. And it's not clear that the Pope is one of his biggest supporters. So that may be also interesting. He is going to briefly visit Yad Vashem, which is the Holocaust Memorial in Israel. And I believe he's also going to go to the Western Wall, which was part of the Old Temple in Jerusalem. And most presidents who visit the Western Wall don't do it with other politicians in Israel. They do it as a kind of personal journey. And then he is going to be giving this presentation in Saudi Arabia, which is also the, you know, sort of the focal point for many Muslims who do the pilgrimage there to Mecca.
So let's talk about that last, that he'll be giving a presentation. What might be expected from him, given comments that he's made that have been critical, and also considering that his tenure as president started out with the so-called Muslim ban, banning temporarily people from entering the country from so-called Muslim-majority nations? What would the dynamics of that be?
Well, you know, again, he's going to the Middle East, and he's going to one of the centers of Islam, and he will be giving a speech on Islam. But again, until I hear it, I don't exactly know what the thrust of that speech is going to be. But it's also, you know, an opportunity for Trump to kind of lay out what he sees as the relationship between the United States in particular, and possibly the West more broadly, and Islam and many of these Arab countries that majority Muslim countries that have been our allies. I mean, again, Saudi Arabia, long-standing ally of the United States, and you know, to some degree, how he sees that relationship continuing, even though he has been an advocate for banning Muslims from coming to the United States, because as he sees it and has articulated it, the threat from radical Islam.
Now, if this trip goes exceedingly well and the meetings go well, the visits to the holy sites go well, how will we know? What would success look like?
Success would probably look like positive discussions of his interactions with a lot of the other leaders of countries, and again, probably following a more closely following a script more closely than Trump tends to. And that's, you know, that as you noted earlier, he tends to fire more off the cuff. And if he's, you know, if he's in these situations where, you know, you can sort of say the wrong thing or ask the wrong question, and that becomes the story, as opposed to, you know, here we are reengaging with our allies in Saudi Arabia and Israel and NATO, and, you know, having tough conversations, but doing it in a, you know, collaborative way. If that's the narrative, then that is probably going to be a successful trip. If the narrative is, you know, did Trump insult somebody, or did he insult a religion, or, you know, did he ask for the wrong kind of food or something, then that, you know, overshadows any of those possibly positive diplomatic engagements.
And he will be the spokesperson in chief also for his America First policy, which is likely to raise a lot of questions as he travels throughout Europe. Do you have any idea what he might expect as he goes on this trip with that policy and what it might mean for the rest of the world in mind?
I have a feeling that's a lot of the questions that he will be receiving from leaders of the G7 countries, which are, you know, advanced industrialized democracies, and they will want to know, what does it mean if you're articulating America First for alliances like the G7 or for NATO? And so they may, you know, they may take those questions directly to him and ask him to explain how those things work together. How does America First work with alliances that have been in place for quite some time?
So as the trip goes forward, it's just begun today. Lily, what in specific are you looking for? What kind of earmarks to see how it's going and where the flashpoints might be?
Well, you know, again, he's got a lot of his communication staff with him. In fact, he's a lot of staff with him. And so when Trump arrives in a lot of these places, you have the normal kind of, you know, fanfare and experiences. And a lot of that's going to be the photos that we'll see on the internet and on newspapers. But then what does the accompanying story written by reporters who are also, you know, either writing in the countries that or following, you know, going with the president as members of the United States media. What are the stories they're reporting? What is the sort of explanation for what he's doing and how he's doing it and what he says? And so it's both the telegraphing of these images of Trump with various world leaders, but also, you know, what is the discussion that they're having and what's reported, what happens at press conferences. And again, if there are people around them who are sort of leaking to the media, what are they saying?
Now, he's had a contentious relationship, Lily, with the press, the media in the United States. What do you think he's likely to face from the press corps in different countries as we wrap up?
I mean, that will definitely be one of the things I'm curious to see, because they, you know, they haven't been following him on the day-to-day level exactly the way the U.S. media has, but they certainly know what's going on and the contentious relationship that he has had with the American media. And so it may be interesting to see what the foreign press in a lot of these countries do, what kind of questions they may have the opportunity to ask, and what they write about the president's visit to their country.
We'll leave it there. Lily, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure to be on the show again.
That was Lily Gorin, professor of political science and global affairs at Carroll University in Waukesha. She's the author of the books Women in the White House and Mad Men in Politics. She was with us today to talk about President Trump's first foreign trip during his term and his approach to diplomacy.